I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small, I buy them all at the 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. We are chatting it up this morning with historian Spencer Johnson, and we're so happy to have him in studio. We are talking, of course, in the season of Thanksgiving, and we're very excited to hear about the history of Thanksgiving from somebody that really knows. Great to see you. How have you been?
Great. Happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody. I've been great.
Thank you so much. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about your history. People know you, of course. Your name, Mr. Spencer Johnson, probably is a little better way of saying it. You were a teacher at the middle school for how many years?
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
I ended up teaching altogether for 39 years, which is incomprehensible.
It is,
isn't it? And about 33 in Hastings. And I retired a little over 2 years ago.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, you must have heard that there was going to be some issues with teaching, and that's why you got out.
No, I got out because I had taught for 39 years. But, you know, my heart's with all the friends of mine, my peers that are working so hard to make things work. Lots of more challenges.
Well, let's talk a little bit about our country's history with Thanksgiving, because I think we all get together. Everybody loves this holiday, but I'm sure that nobody knows as much as what you're going to be telling us about in just a second. So tell us a little bit about the history of Thanksgiving.
Well, this is a really, really cool holiday. There's lots of traditions and a lot of history to it. Thanksgiving is a national holiday celebrated not only in the United States, but Canada, Grenada, St. Lucia, Liberia, depending on the date. So if you look at it not as an American holiday about turkey and pumpkin pie, it's kind of a day of giving thanks for the harvest. That's how it started out.
Oh, okay.
Hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And it wasn't so much a feast day as a fast day. There were in Britain many, many years ago, like hundreds of years ago, they would have these fast days to celebrate maybe the victory in battle or a good harvest or many different things. And it wasn't always on the same date.
So when you say fast day, is that...
You don't eat.
But that's kind of typically or historically, that was a way of giving up to the Lord? Is that kind of it?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with religion. There's no question.
Okay,
That you're making a sacrifice.
A sacrifice, okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we can go, and we should, when it gets down to Mardi Gras, talk about the history of that. But it's the same concept, as you don't eat. Well, at that one, you have a big blowout at Mardi Gras, and then you fast or you give up certain things for 40 days till Lent. But so in our history, we associate it with the pilgrims and of Massachusetts. And remember, a pilgrim is somebody who travels for religious reasons. And it's kind of a generic thing, but we also associate it with some of those early settlers, British settlers in Massachusetts. Religious freedom has always been a thing in our culture in the United States. And ironically, the people we call the pilgrims called themselves separatists. The Church of England at that time, there was laws in England, like most countries, that you had to go to the church the king picked. It's against the law to go to a different church. This is partly why we chose freedom of religion later on. We don't think the government should be telling us, but this is our culture. And these separatists, they wanted to separate from the Church of England because they thought it was not strict enough.
People, are they the Puritans?
Okay, there's another group called the Puritans, and they end up in Massachusetts too. So these are different subsects of Christianity.
Okay.
The Puritans wanted to purify the church. The Puritans wanted to purify the church, and the separatists wanted to separate and do their worshiping the way they wanted to. And so the first thing they did is they went to the Netherlands, and for several years they lived there. But they started and they were happy with that. They found jobs, etc. But they started realizing their children are becoming Dutch children growing up in that country, and they wanted still to be English. They were still loyal to the king, and they wanted to be Englishmen, but they didn't want to have to go to the English church.
So what year would this be?
This is late 1500s.
Okay.
Yeah, the late 1500s.
So before the Reformation.
Yeah, and I have a timeline here coming up here. One thing they wanted to do, which is ironic, is they wanted to eliminate all religious holidays, including Christmas and Easter, and replace them with days of fasting where they don't. So they wanted to get rid of the celebration and have it more of a solemn giving up type of a thing. So if we have a timeline here, think about this. You know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. And so the English, there was a guy named John Cabot who I can't say these people discovered anything because there are already people here. But he comes to New England, Newfoundland in 1497. So by the late 1400s, they're British in our continent, in America. They started going up and down. There are a lot of stories about the Spanish finding gold in different places. And so the British are trying to get their foothold on the New World too, with the expectation they're going to find gold. A lot of them are going to go up where Virginia is, up the James River in the late 1500s. And there was a colony called Roanoke in the 1580s. And it was a lost colony that people had settled there and then had to leave. Some people left, and when they came back, there were no English settlers there at all. It's still this mystery about what happened to the lost colony of Roanoke. But by 1607, Jamestown in Virginia, and that's still a town today, that's the first permanent English colony. There were other English colonies that started and failed or washed out for different reasons, but Jamestown stayed, although they had a lot of struggles. So this is how Englishmen put their foot on the New World. Now, the pilgrims that we're talking about, the separatists, they're going to land in about 1620, and they had different choices of where to go. They had been living in the Netherlands for a while, decided they want to come to America. They had read stories about gold and the English settlements and things like that. So one place they were maybe going to end up was in Virginia. Another one might have been where New York is going to be, but the Dutch had, because the Dutch were already there. Anyway, they start to sail, and they don't really end up where they want to be. They kind of got blown off course a little bit. And there's upward Massachusetts is a great big hook. There's this big, big bay that we call Massachusetts Bay. So that now they're exploring to try to figure out where they want to make a settlement, and they're still living on their boat for a while. And of course, living on it was a merchant ship with groups of people. It's tight. People get sick. People get dysentery. There's something called scurvy where you don't eat enough vegetables and vitamin C. But they were sending little parties out to figure out where they were going to go. And they eventually find an Indian village that had been abandoned years before that. And so it was in a good location. The Indians had been farming, and so they didn't have to clear too many trees or anything like that. So they're living there for a couple of years, and there are struggles, but the native people there are called the Wampanoag Indians, and there's lots of different tribes. You know, we haven't necessarily heard of that tribe in Minnesota, but out east that was and still is a big thing. And one day, the chief of the Wampanoags comes walking in with his Indians, and there was also an Indian there named Squanto. Now, that's a name that we associate with Thanksgiving. So Squanto says, "Hello, Englishman," in English, and they're just amazed that this native person is speaking English. Well, Squanto's history, he had been kidnapped years before and kept as a Spanish slave, ended up in Britain, lived in Britain for a while, ends up back in the New World. So we can't really look at these pilgrims as like the first people that show up, the first Europeans that show up. There had been people kind of coming and going there. Squanto was really, really helpful, and he stayed for a while, and he showed the Englishmen, what's the best thing to hunt and how to plant corn. And that story I learned when I was a kid is where they put two dead fish in the hole, drop the corn in there, and it's fertilizer. It makes a lot of sense. And so that's going to help some of those people survive. In November of 1621, they decide to celebrate a harvest feast. And it's still not clear in history whether they invited the native people or the native people just showed up because they heard something was going on. But when the native people came, it was a three-day celebration, and they had lots and lots of wild game. There is a couple of first-person or primary source things written down by people who were there. There were two accounts of people who were there that wrote things down. I'm going to read one of them to you.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah, and so it's really interesting to know what they ate, and then we'll get to some of those traditions. So they began to gather in the small harvest they had and to fit up their houses and dwellings against the winter, being all well recovered in health and strength and had all things in good plenty. For as some were thus employed in affairs abroad, others were exercising in fishing, about cod and bass and other fish, of which they took good store, of which every family had their portion. All the summer there was no want, and now began to come in store of fowl as winter approached, of which this place did abound when they came first, but afterwards decreased by degrees. And besides waterfowl, there a great store of wild turkeys, of which they took many, besides venison, etc. Besides, they had a peck of meal a week to a person, and now since harvest, Indian corn to that proportion, which made many afterwards so write largely of their plenty here to their friends in England, which were not feigned but true reports. And so that kind of gives a little bit of insight. The native people came, and they brought in, I think it said five deer, somebody had reported. But there was also lots, when they talk about fowl, they're talking about ducks and geese and turkeys, wild turkeys. So they had a three-day celebration of their, you know, three-day feast days, I suppose you could say. So that's the one that we remember as the first one. And there really wasn't much thought about that for a long time until some histories are being written in the 1850s. But New England, the area, you know, above New York, different areas had various Thanksgiving celebrations depending on the location after 1812, and they were not always on the same date. But Abraham Lincoln declared for the last Thursday, in 1863, he said, we're going to have it on the last Thursday of November, and it's going to be kind of a religious holiday. I mean, he can't pick religious holidays, but it's going to be, you know, a day of solemn prayer and things like that. So in 1941, Roosevelt and Congress decided that instead of being the last Thursday, it was going to be the fourth Thursday. So it's kind of that shifting of dates and things like that. We have a lot of interesting traditions. You know, football is something that we have a tradition from. So football is a Thanksgiving tradition for a lot of families. And I did a little bit of research and found out the very first football game that was purposely done on Thanksgiving was in 1892. It was Purdue versus Chicago, and Purdue won. And it was in Indiana. So that kind of starts, obviously, where people weren't watching TV at that time, but that starts a thing. The Macy's Day Parade is another big tradition,
yes,
that we always had. And one of my favorite movies is The Miracle on 34th Street,
yes,
which is a Christmas movie, but a lot of it takes place around the Macy's Day Parade. That tradition began in 1924, and Macy's would have their own employees do a parade, and it sort of grew and grew and grew and grew, and now it's this huge, huge deal, which we always put on and hardly ever watch. We just put it on and start cooking in the kitchen, but it's just a tradition.
But that's your tradition.
That's,
I like that.
Yeah, that's one of our traditions. Pumpkin pie is a tradition, and I love pumpkin pie. Pumpkins are native to America, and they're in a squash. They're a winter squash, and they were first grown in northern Mexico and southern what will be the United States one day. So that was a thing that they had for a long time, but of course, seeds are being exchanged by this time, and they're going to go to England and things like that. So it's pretty likely that the pilgrims had pumpkins growing, but they probably didn't make pies out of them. They probably made soup or just, you know, use them as a squash. We see pumpkin pie recipes in English cookbooks about 1675. So that's early. And it's not going to be the kind of pie that we have. You know, it's going to be a little bit different, maybe a little more savory than sweet. Plymouth, Massachusetts is the place where the pilgrims had landed. And there's all this folklore about the rock,
yes,
the Plymouth Rock. And, of course, we all learned about I learned about that when I was a kid. And think, oh, this is a symbol of the first place they stepped off. And you could go see it today, but there's a lot of buts on this one. There was no contemporary mentions of the rocks. The people who were there never mentioned a rock at all. But the son of one of the original settlers, when he was very, very old, talked about how his father said that there's this rock, and he pointed out a rock down there in Plymouth, and that's the rock that they picked. Well, it stayed there for a long time, and eventually there was a dock built over it, and then in the 1850s, the people in Massachusetts decided they want to take that rock and put it in a more prominent place, and they kind of dug it out, and they broke it in half. So eventually, they brought it in the middle of town in the 1880s, and there's a little monument to that whole thing, and the pieces have been rejoined. Souvenir hunters used to chip at it, so it probably doesn't look like anything. And again, we can't say for sure that that was a rock that they stepped off on, but that's how folklore goes sometimes. Those are family stories that are valid, too.
Was it families that came over initially, or was it single people, married people?
This is a really good question. It's going to be families that came over, you know, the Pilgrims and the Puritans, which, again, are English, all English groups, religious groups that are Christians, but they don't really want to follow the King of England's or the Church of England's policies. When the Englishmen came to Virginia, where Jamestown and some of these other places are, they really thought they're going to find gold laying around, because apparently the Spanish did down in Mexico. But that didn't happen, and they're going to struggle for a long time until finally they figure out if they grow tobacco. That's kind of an evolution. When they start growing tobacco, that becomes a big, big deal. And that was pretty much mostly single men that came to Virginia, and a lot of them came just thinking they're going to pick up gold, and they're not going to really have to work. So there were some struggles with that. Eventually, as more and more boats come to Virginia, you're going to get families and established towns. The Pilgrims, the Puritans, and those settlers, they come for religious reasons, which is, again, a big part of our history. They're going to come as communities already set, with children and families and things like that. One other thing I forgot to mention is the Mayflower Compact, and that was something we had to learn in school also. These people still wanted to be Englishmen, but they didn't get to Virginia, where there was already some established law and order. They thought, we better come up with some sort of an agreement. And they wrote out the Mayflower Compact, which was very similar to laws in England, but it was more of a democracy than anything. They're not going to defer to the king. They're going to say, we've got these people here, and we're going to elect different people once in a while to be the leader or the governor. And that's one of those things, our steps and steps and steps towards our Constitution and our self-government. So that was a thing too. A more recent tradition that we have is Black Friday. And this is a pretty recent thing, you know, about all the shopping. So a lot of people the day after Thanksgiving, actually the night of Thanksgiving, sometimes are going to go out there and shop. There's a lot of on things. And I'm not a big fan of Black Friday. Just personally, I think it's awesome, but I just don't need to go do that. You know, the next day we spend cleaning up the house and eating more pumpkin pie and turkey.
Exactly, yes.
But I'm a big fan of small businesses. So there's also a thing called Small Business Saturday. There's something called Cyber Monday, and there's something called Giving Tuesday. Of course, everybody's jumping on the bandwagon here. So, you know, I always think it's good to support small businesses, you know, that they can survive in all times and things like that.
So those are good traditions.
Those are really good traditions. Plymouth today is a modern town. If you went there, they all have a historic site called Plymouth Plantation. It's an outdoor living history museum, which means when you go there, it's like when you go to Fort Snelling. There are people dressed in costumes enacting the time period. And apparently this is a pretty hardcore first-person place where each person who works there takes on the role of a character who was really there, does a huge amount of research to that person's family to the point where they actually figure out what their accent might have been depending on what part of England their family had come from. And that's a pretty cool thing to go see. Also next to that is something called the Wampanoag home site, which is a native village. And there they don't speak Wampanoag, they speak English. That would be a really cool thing to go see on Thanksgiving sometime. Mm-hmm. So we have lots and lots of traditions that we have today, and there's a history to the whole thing. It's always interesting that it began as a fast. We're going to not eat, and now we celebrate it with eating the biggest.
With overeating.
I mean, it's bigger than Christmas for overeating. So
it is. It's a great holiday, though,
and it's
isn't
a family
it?
Holiday. That's a really important thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And you ask me what we're going to do. We always pull family together that we can, and the family that's not there, we call and try to include in our prayers, and that's a really important thing. And here it is. We have a lot to be thankful for.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you, and to you
Thank
too.
Thank you. We learned so much today. Historian Spencer Johnson, and we want to thank him for coming in today. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.
I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small. I buy them all at the 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I